Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
We hear all the time about working mothers, and what do you picture when you picture a working mother? You picture a woman with children, or a child, and she's working full-time. She is out there every single day from 9 to 5, and then she's trying to find a way of taking care of those kids and getting everything else done, being a mother and working at the same time. Is that an accurate picture of working mothers? And if it isn't, what role do working fathers, working husbands, that is, play in the life of motherhood? What is the myth that feminism has sold us about men who work outside the home and women who work outside the home? We're going to be talking about motherhood, feminism, and working husbands. Suzanne Venker joins us. She's a regular guest. She's a married mother of two children in St. Louis. He's been a guest on numerous radio and television programs, including The View, Fox and Friends, and The Laura Ingraham Show. She's author of several books, including The Flip Side of Feminism, her forthcoming book titled The Alpha Female's Guide to Men and Marriage. And she's recently written a column for Fox News titled A Letter to My Breadwinner Husband. Suzanne, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks for having me.
You write about living a comfortable life, and you say that you have your steady breadwinner husband to thank for that. What do you mean?
So I'm glad you brought that up, because I may do a follow-up post to sort of explain that phrase, comfortable life. I think that's really important. I opened the letter, or the reason why it came to me, is I was going to the store, grocery store, at 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock on a weekday, and I was thinking about how every time I've gone to the grocery store since we've had kids, it's always been during a work day, and that I've never had to rush at the last minute and hurry up to get something on the table because I was running from the office or have to deal with long lines or have to go when a bunch of other people are there. So I was thinking about how comfortable that made my life. That was an example of something where it could have been really not enjoyable. And so that's what prompted the letter. There are 1,000 examples of living comfortably that really fly in the face of everything we hear in the culture about this harried mother lifestyle, where everybody's working full-time and doing things last minute or stressed out or guilt-ridden and all of the rest. So the point of the letter was to thank my husband for being that steady, and the key word is steady, year in and year out, full-time breadwinner that has allowed me to move in and out of the workforce to accommodate the needs of our family and our children, but also pursue my own writing career, which is not something that anybody can do if they're not dependent in some way on someone else to bring home that check every 2 weeks, which I certainly don't do as a writer.
You mentioned the moving in and out of the workforce that you have done over your time as a mother and a wife, and you say that that's probably more typical of quote-unquote working mothers than it is atypical.
Right, and let me explain why. So when you hear the statistics in the media, you will hear them often talk about the 70% of mothers who work. That's it. That's all they say, 70% of mothers who work. What they don't tell you is that half of that group are women like myself, because the Department of Labor defines a working mother as any woman with children who brings home even $1 a year. So I have a friend, for instance, who's a mother of 7, and as they've gotten older, she started a fitness business in her basement where she just teaches 2 times a week. She would be considered a working mother by that definition, when, of course, her lifestyle is in no way comparable. So my point being is that they're lumping the part-timers or the people who work in that capacity in this small way to add to the main breadwinner's income as a working mother, and people don't know that. There are far fewer, quote-unquote, working mothers in how we define them than people think. And the people who have lived like I have, where I've been at home with my children, but I've also carved out this other piece for myself, or women who have their own businesses, is just very common. And if you lump that group in with the stay-at-homers full-time, which is about 20%, you get basically half of all married mothers right there. And that's an untapped market.
The point being, of course, is that they are free to do this thing, move in, move out, actually engage in a little entrepreneurship because there's a steady income coming from their spouse.
Absolutely. And that, I thought, was something that needs to be addressed and acknowledged and recognized, not just for men's own worth, you know, and hearing that appreciation, but just societally speaking, that when we're talking about these issues, let's call a spade a spade. Let's say why these women are able to live like this. It's not the way it's presented. So my life is a perfect example of that, and I think there needs to be more attention paid to the person, usually the husband, sometimes it's reversed, but it's still largely the husband who is carrying the bulk of the financial weight.
What's the narrative that is generally pushed by both feminism and a strongly feminist-influenced culture and media about that guy who goes to work every day and puts in his 35 or 40 years supporting a wife, a mother, a family?
Basically, that he's simply obsolete, that life is not real, that it doesn't exist, that it's back from the 50s, that he's gone, dead, buried. If you're a forward-thinking person in any way, you recognize that as a fact, but it is not a fact. And the untold story is that those men are still existing in large part so that their wives can have the quote-unquote comfortable lives that I was describing in my letter. And let me say, by comfortable, I mean, I knew from day one that I was always going to be at home. So when I married, it was just a given that anyone who marries me has to be on the same page with that. And I remember, you know, I was married before, no kids, a couple of years in my early 20s, and I quit some jobs, you know, that I had, and it was kind of a source of contention between us because he was not the kind of person who would have wanted me, I guess, to have that flexibility to do that. It was almost like a competitive thing. If he has to go in, then I have to go in. My husband, of course, of today does not feel that way and always had the same goal that I did from day one. So there's like no competitiveness or resentfulness whatsoever. It's a joint effort.
This is, as we've talked many times, Susan, this isn't a perfect solution or one that has arrived at. You just used the term several times, goal. It's a hoped-for goal with many couples. I'll use myself as an example. My wife and I married. I worked full-time. She worked part-time. Kids were born. She stayed home. Kids grew up a little. She went back to part-time. Then in the last 10 years or so, I'm still going to work. She's staying at home, now taking care of a grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
And we had together as a goal, at first not so much stated, but then later, the goal of, look, the goal is you don't have to work.
Mm-hmm.
I'll keep going to work. That's what I do. You don't have to work. That's better for everybody involved. But it took, well, we've been married almost 30 years. Talk about that if you would.
Yeah. I mean, if you have to look at your marriage as a joint effort that demands two parents to do these different tasks. And what we have in America is this complete dismissal of the work that goes into raising children and running a home. The whole focus, as and there's no denying this, is on work, right? We talk about work, we see people working, we emphasize work, we talk about the economy ad nauseum. There is no recognition for all of the stuff that has to get done outside of work, which I like to think of as life, right? Life and love. You have family. And if you have two people who are on the same page from the get-go about how to make that happen, and you're not competing, then you are going to be more successful. But it is true that it has to be a long-term plan instead of a do it as you go along and then see how you feel, which I think a lot of people get into that, especially assuming based on what they are taught by the culture that they're going to be working, and then they find out they don't want to, but they set up the scene where now they need both incomes. You definitely have that going on. And if you had not set it up that way from the get-go because you got this message, you may not be in that boat.
I wanted you to address something that I've noticed, the guys that I work with have noticed it as well. And it's usually a situation where both husband and wife, father and mother, are working full time. In some cases, the wife might be making as much or more than her husband. That's not unusual nowadays. And what we've noticed is usually around kind of midlife crisis time, the guy gets a little irresponsible, if you ask me. Hey, my wife's working. We got a lot of money saved because we've been on two incomes. And I think, you know, I'd like to pursue my hobby. Maybe I'm going to quit my job and paint like I've always dreamed of doing. Doesn't always work out that way. But I'm sure you've noticed that happening as well.
Yeah, and I, you know, to each his own, I don't have, you know, if your wife's income can support your lifestyle for the long haul and you want to switch it up, then I guess the same thing would apply. He could write a letter to her, I guess, thanking her for doing this so that he can do that. But that gets a little trickier when it's reversed for a lot of reasons. And I think there's a lot more resentment on women's part when they throw themselves into that traditionally male role to work full-time and year-round, and then when the husband isn't, then you really up the ante there because you just don't have the option to quit, right? And a lot of women want that option, even if they're choosing to do it. They would like to know or feel that they don't have to, and once you've reversed it in that way, you're in, you know, once the man has gone out. And it works much better when it's the female, and that just has to do with human nature and who men and women are and how men get their identity largely through their work and women do in other ways. So it's, you know, it can be done, but it's tricky.
I know that what you've written here in this, what I think is a rather touching letter to your husband, has probably really torqued some people off. What kind of reaction have you gotten so far?
Funny. When I wrote it, well, first of all, let me just say that I wrote it for my own subscribers on my website. I didn't write it for Fox News, but then my editor happens to be a subscriber. My editor at Fox is a subscriber, so she called me and asked if she could publish it, and I said, fine. So that's when it went into a different element there. I wasn't even thinking about that being, quote-unquote, controversial, but certainly, yes, you're right, that's what has happened, and it's been a really interesting couple of days. I've been absolutely slammed like I've never been slammed before with email. And I can tell you this, though, 90% of it, if not more, is overwhelmingly positive. And
really?
Thank you and grateful. And people are just, I'm really overwhelmed by the response. And actually, even the comments, if you go through the comments, which are just unending on the article on Fox, I'd say 75% of them are the same in the same vein. You got your haters, but, you know, your people are going to complain about, you can't, you know, you're never going to make everybody happy, obviously. But I've been overwhelmed with love in the last 2 days, I can't even tell you, from men and women who are thanking me profusely for putting a voice to this that you don't hear ever. They were shocked that they read it. They just couldn't believe it. They kept thinking there was going to be a catch in the letter. It's really sad when you think about it, right? Because how could it be so shocking? This is how far it's come, that just thanking man, a husband, for doing this thing that they do for their families is considered, quote-unquote, controversial or inappropriate. I don't even know what the word would be on the other side. But the point is that the majority were just overwhelmingly positive.
So it sounds like, against expectations, you are hearing from the very people that are like you, that are saying, wow, I should have written that letter to my husband.
No, I have heard from people who have said that, yes. But you know what else I've heard that's been even more dominant? Is from husbands who said, I would give anything for my wife to have written that letter, but in 35 years she never has told me anything like this. That's what's breaking my heart. I had another one just this morning from a guy who said, if I had gotten this letter even once, I wouldn't be divorced. It's really moving, and it's just mostly from, I mean, actually, I'm hearing from both men and women, but the ones that are men that I hear from, that's the overarching theme.
Suzanne Venker is a married mother of two children in St. Louis. She's been a guest on numerous radio and television shows, including The View, Fox and Friends, and The Laura Ingraham Show. She's author of several books, including The Flip Side of Feminism, and a forthcoming publication titled The Alpha Female's Guide to Men and Marriage, and a recent Fox News column, A Letter to My Breadwinner Husband. You can find a link to this column and to her books at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Suzanne, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson on the other side of the break with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel. We'll be in Numbers chapters 13 and 14, talking about the 12 spies in Canaan.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors. Coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.